I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is presented by Bon Bon, a neighborhood bistro in Lawrence, Kansas, bringing Midwest flavors to international cuisine.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And as you just heard, we're celebrating 10 years almost of Heritage Radio Network. And I just realized, as we heard that commercial from Michael Harlan Turkel, I think that was his voice, that my guest today was on one of my very first shows.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the first. It was the first show.
I had a show back in the ancient, ancient Heritage Radio.
This is a veteran podcaster also, Rachel Wharton. But, okay, so to back up a little bit, we wanted to talk about whenever you see a book, any book, could be a cookbook or not, written by a celebrity, you'll also often see a name in small print. So,
A with,
The Art of the Deal by, vaguely by, Donald J. Trump with Tony Schwartz. Or The Kind Diet by Alicia Silverstone with, I believe, Victoria Pearson. Anyway, so that with person is the co-writer. And in the realm of cookbooks, especially ones by big-name chefs or otherwise celebrity people.
Or even any chef.
Or any chef, yeah, who needs a co-writer. Rachel is often that person. So you have co-written cookbooks from the likes of Action Bronson. What is it called? Fuck, That's Delicious.
Yes.
And
Next one, Stone Beyond Belief, is coming out in March. Belief.
And a couple years ago, you co-wrote Soo-hee Kim's The Good Fork, a local restaurateur here. She recently teamed up with you again to write Korean Home Cooking, her follow-up book all about her Korean heritage, recipes and wonderful stuff. And you guys are on a team now. But
And I also did Freddie Prinze Jr.'s books.
That's what I forgot to mention.
Ooh, and Julia Rothman, who's an now increasingly famous illustrator. I helped her with, she does a series and she works with like someone who knows about gardening or farming. And I was her food person. So and Lou DiPaolo, like in the Italian market in Little Italy. I worked with a lot of different
people. DiPaolo's Essential Italian Cooking. It wasn't like a cookbook. It was a guide to shopping for Italian ingredients.
It was like a deep dive into 10 Italian ingredients.
Right.
We spent a lot of time in Italy.
That sounds really...
It was really fun. I learned a lot.
You went to Italy with Lou DiPaolo.
We actually got stuck there during the hurricane, during Sandy.
We
were stuck in Rome. It was terrible. No, it was terrible because his business was in the flood zone.
Yeah, in the lower Manhattan. Ooh, exciting. So from Freddie Prinze Jr. to local chefs like Soo-hee Kim and so forth, you've really run the gamut. And actually, we were going to have Soo-hee back again because we had you guys here to talk about the first book a couple of years ago. But Soo-hee's had to drop out at the last minute for a plane issue. But we got Rachel, so party time. And
I'm the behind the scenes.
It's actually really interesting to learn about the behind the scenes cookbook writing. So first and foremost, like for people who are like just not really noticing that there's a little name there or just, you know, not sure what that entails.
Sometimes there isn't a name there, even when there is a name there.
And that would be a ghostwriter. Yeah, right?
Yes.
Okay, but you're different because your name is there.
Most of the time.
Because you have some cred, right?
Yes. Well, yeah. I don't even know if it's that, you know, it's fun to have. I mean, because, you know, people, it's like part of one of the things that I like because you can spend up to 5 years on these books. Mm-hmm. So it's nice. It's not just that I have credit. It's nice for me that people know that I did that.
So transparency with the reader.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's important.
So also, like, one of the things I usually try to fight for in my contracts, mm-hmm. because you've spent so much time, you want people to know that you were part of this beautiful thing.
Yeah.
The people, like other editors who would hire me to do more of them.
Right. Yes, that is important too. So, okay, in the name of transparency, I guess. What exactly, you mentioned 5 years, which sounds very daunting.
Yeah, that usually it's more like two.
Okay.
But I've had some books that took forever. I did a book about Filipino food, and that book, I am a Filipino.
And this is how we cook?
Yes.
The jeepney owners?
And that took a really long time, partially mm-hmm. because, I mean, it was kind of a shifting landscape in the United States, especially with Filipino food as it was happening. And originally it was going to be many of the things that they cooked at their restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then with more research and trips in the Philippines, they decided quite rightly that they wanted to do more regional, like find regional dishes that no one knew about.
From the Philippines,
and they have a few of the things that they had made, that they were doing in their restaurants, but a lot of it's like traditional dishes from research, from traveling all over the country.
Wow, so that's really interesting. So the book took on different topics than they specialized at their restaurants or really knew about before doing the book.
Yeah, exactly. And so we basically kind of like redid the book uh-huh. almost twice.
Oh,
so
wow.
It took a long time. It took a long time.
But it sounds like you came up with something that was better than what you originally envisioned.
Yes, and part of it was just what was happening.
Uh-huh.
Happening. Like sometimes when you start a book, like things like what's out there, like happening in the food world or in restaurants where people are eating, like it changes as you're working on it, and you want your book to respond or reflect, and that happens often. For example, mm-hmm. with Sohee's first book,
The Good Fork.
That took at least 2 years, and when we first started it, they hadn't even thought about opening a Korean restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
At all. Like, it wasn't even something that she had considered. And so by the time we were halfway through, probably we're still in the proposal phase, but I think it was almost ready to go out. And then they decided that they wanted to open a Korean restaurant. And it's like, well, this book should have some
a representation.
Food.
Yeah.
And it hadn't had that. And then we decided that the book should be chronological because we could start with what she learned early on, mm-hmm. with cooking for other people, then go into the dishes at the restaurant, then go into the dishes at the restaurant after Hurricane Sandy because they had, you know, it was really hard to get people to Red Hook. So they like started brunch. And then the mm-hmm. last chapter was like the next horizon, I'm opening a Korean place. So that was, we totally weren't going to do it chronologically.
Yeah, it turned into a narrative journey.
Yes.
Of sorts.
It was cool.
Yeah. So how much say do you have in these decisions?
well, actually, structure is kind of my job.
Yeah.
That, like, organizing information, a lot of people can even write really well, but it's hard to figure out how to organize information. I mean, that's what I do as a writer, journalist. You're organizing information within a story. You're figuring out how to tell the story. And so that's actually, like, a lot of my job. That's, mm-hmm. And we have to do that. Often you have to do that for the proposal phase. You have to figure out how are we going to tell the story of this restaurant or of this food, and how are we going to organize the information? And sometimes you end up with a cookbook that truly is like either seasonal. I actually have never done a seasonally organized cookbook. There are a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Or you're like, you might, I've actually, I don't think I've ever done one that was appetizers, entrees,
really?
Dessert. I'm not sure I've ever
what
done that either.
What was Action Bronson's cookbook? I should probably...
Oh, his is 100 things.
Oh, okay. 100. That's an interesting structure.
Well, it took me a while. I wanted to be able to capture the delight of his random likes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes that book is not a full cookbook. There's maybe 40 recipes. So the other 60 entries are stories or obsessions or, silly anecdotes or
like free
lists.
Associative yeah. like food talking.
And that's basically. What I think is awesome about mm-hmm. him is that, you know, it's not 100 recipes. Sometimes it's a story about a bagel that, you know, really makes you rethink a bagel. And so I was like, how do we do this? And then in retrospect, that's what the Savour 100 some of your listeners may know, that's how they make a list every year. I didn't realize that till after I came up with the idea. I was like, I'm just going to do a list, and it's going to be one of his things. And I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, it's like the Savoir 100. That's how you get it. You can then write about anything because you just have to have, you can have 100 things.
But now it's channeled through Action Bronson, who is a very different from you. Let's just say he's a big personality.
We like a lot of the same things when it comes to food.
Sure.
And funny stuff.
Well, you're different from Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, I'm totally
and Lou DiPaolo,
different.
So you have to sort of speak through, and So He Kim or and whoever. You have to like, do you have to like mime them through words and also?
It depends on the book.
Yeah.
With Action, he's hilarious. I truly, it's him. Like, I would say like, if the book is 50,000 words, 499,999 are his words. Mm. And I listen to him, and I just kind of try to organize everything he tells me in a great way. And
so he doesn't write down anything?
He could, but I listen, so he doesn't have to.
Oh.
But what was I going to... Well, he writes, because like when he works on music, he's writing. That's what he writes. He writes his lyrics and stuff like that. What was I going to say? But everyone's different because... So like recipes, for example, like there's some expository writing in a recipe. And so I have to add some of that stuff in. Like, you know, like...
The head notes.
Yeah. Like the stuff, the important part, like the... Just like the little detail of a head note that explains why you're going to have to buy whatever flower or something. Like, I'll have to add in those details. And then in some books, like, actually, and Freddie wrote everything, too. He just needed, like, someone to help organize it, test the recipes, and then maybe, like, ask a question here or there. Like, he wrote everything himself, too. He also has a great voice. And I think he actually writes for... I think writing is part of what he does. Like I think that's also like one of his jobs, is not just acting and he does a lot of voice work. Was actually writing, maybe for like wrestling, I think. And I try to do that with everyone, but with some people it's more lifting on my part. Like with Lou, I also listened to him, but then we went and did. I listened to his stories, and then we went to Italy for like 6 weeks total. And so I incorporated my own reporting from those trips, like things we saw, like when we learned, like he basically took me through all the things that he thought were most important that he'd seen a dozen times, hundreds of times. And then I took notes like how the Parmigiano Reggiano was made, like it goes into a copper cauldron. And Luke could have probably told me all those details, but because I was there, I was able to put things in that I had seen, like what the trees look like and things like that. So with him, that was a little more collaborative, but still as much in his voice as I could get.
Yeah. So, okay, I want to ask you a tough question. So when you see, you've worked, okay, first of all, you're a James Beard Award-winning food writer on your own, having written the Edible New York, Brooklyn.
It was actually one of the articles was about Roberta's.
Yes. Where we are right now.
Very meta.
You're,
that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the Brooklyn.
It was. Food, so that's why we're talking about the 10-year anniversary here of Heritage. But so you've worked with many great chefs, and you've written for New York Times and many esteemed publications. So when you see a celebrity who is not really like a chef decide that they're going to make a cookbook, do you have a bit of a knee-jerk reaction like, oh, well, who do they think they are? Like, I'm talking about somebody like Alicia Silverstone or Freddie Prinze Jr. or like Tiffany Amber Thiessen, like, or somebody who wants to have a new, basically it sounds like they want a career change and reinvent themselves as a food personality.
Well, probably maybe the first time someone was like, hey, this person wants to do a book, maybe the first time that ever.
Yeah.
But now actually what I realized, well, no, it's also like Freddie was enrolled in culinary school and then he got his first acting gig and dropped out, and his mom worked in a restaurant. That happens every time. Like, who is this person? And like,
who do they think they are?
And then you're like, oh, they actually like legit cook really well. And it's been the passion of theirs for a long time.
Okay.
And I find that's usually the case. First of all, like, I wouldn't really want to do those books because, like, for a book to be good, there has to be that passion and that story like, so, and they have to really care. And so it's
Freddie, that was like a different story. Yeah.
And actually, I mean, his book was fun because it was like, it was kind of like, he's a healthy eater and it was, and he makes, and I think it's like kind of healthy dude food. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend loved everything I made for that book.
That's great.
And Freddie grew up, he's Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. and he grew up in New Mexico. So a lot of his dishes were either inspired by his Puerto Rican heritage. He spent summers. See, like, this is all the stuff you learn. You're like, oh, this person actually has like a totally amazing background. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff was either from his Puerto Rico, like growing, like visiting his grandparents in Puerto Rico, or like amazing New Mexican dishes that hadn't really made before. And I actually loved testing the recipes for that book. And some of that stuff I still make all the time.
Wow. Mm. But there's a different reason why his book is getting published as opposed to maybe somebody who has an amazing Puerto Rican restaurant that has been 25 years strong.
Yeah.
Is a community.
Because they sell
People
who have a following sell books.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. Well, there's a lot of small publishers out there. I think if you can write well, you can probably get your book published somewhere. But you may not make. Most people don't make any. Like, you have to do it. Most people have to do it because they love it, the book, and they because most people do not make very much money to do a cookbook.
Right. And it also doesn't hurt to look like a TV star, yeah. like Freddie Prinze Jr.
I mean, when you do books, if you
do press.
Well, yeah. And you also, you've written book proposals. Part of the book proposal is going over the platform of the person who is, I'm popping my peas, the platform of the person who is, whose book it is.
Right.
Like how many followers do they have? Like, are they already out on the road all the time so everybody knows them already? Do they have a TV show? Mm-hmm. Are they about to launch a condiment? You know, like, that's mm-hmm. one of the things you
it's
have
important.
To... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more. I want to ask some more hard questions right after a quick little commercial break.
This episode is presented by Bon Bon, a neighborhood bistro in Lawrence, Kansas, bringing Midwest flavors to international cuisine. Bon Bon is a place for friends and neighbors to come together and enjoy good food and good company. The heart of Bon Bon is filled with love for the community of Lawrence, Kansas, for the staff and suppliers that put food on the tables, for quality local ingredients, and for fun, creative dishes. Learn more at bonbonlawrence.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Michael Harlan Turkel, and I'm the host of The Food Scene here on HRN. This show explores the intersection of food, art, and design by talking to people who are inspired by these ideas. The show features food photographers, food stylists, interior designers, and so much more. All the players that make the world so visually delicious. You can find The Food Scene wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, we're back chatting more with veteran Heritage Radio Network guest, previous former host, Rachel Wharton.
I'm a veteran guest. I totally am.
You are. I think you've been on the show a few times.
I feel like I've been more. On. I was on like Cutting the Curd. I haven't.
Yeah.
There's no reason I should have been on Cutting the Curd. I don't even know how that happened.
Well, it's good to have you back. It's been a while. As you were saying, that there's not enough bathrooms in Roberta's.
Yes.
As usual. So that hasn't changed.
I do remember in the early days, there was a car right where this nice family is eating pizza. Remember there was a car? It was like a car and you just like ate around it. And there was the car
a
became a wood
of
fired
a car,
stove.
Yeah.
Like a Studebaker.
Oh, I love that wood stove.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cozy. Well, it's good to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
And to chat more about this behind-the-scenes business, which is really interesting. And I wanted to know, for people who are intrigued now, because it sounds a little glamorous. Oh, like, I envy the person who got to work with Chrissy Teigen, that was. Or whoever, you know, it may be that is, like, making a cookbook. I'm sure it's a lot of work, too. But how did you break into this world?
My first book was actually when I was an editor at Edible Brooklyn, Edible Manhattan. They were doing, Edibles are a group of magazines all over the country, and they were doing a series of five. I think with Rodale, and I got tapped to do the Edible Brooklyn one. But, and I think, wait, maybe that wasn't even my first book. I don't know. One of my friends is an editor. We went to grad school together. She's an editor at Chronicle, and she had done a very, very, very successful book about whoopie pies. And she wanted to do hand pies, because she's a baker. So even though she usually edits other people's, she's probably been the editor on many of the authors you've had on the show. But she was about to have a baby, and she didn't think she could do all the work, like the writing part of it. And then she actually tested like every single recipe, like right up until the day she gave birth, pie after pie after pie. And one of my parts of that job was interviewing, doing like long form stories of 10 hand pie makers around the country, like people who made them, like savory pies in Louisiana and like fruit pies in Texas, which was really fun. And I don't know. And then Lou DiPaolo's agent found me.
Right, so
a lot of times the agents find me. Mm-hmm. Agents ask me to help. Agents or editors know that someone needs help with a book, and they ask me if I'm interested.
Got it. So with that friend's book that you co-wrote, now people recognize that you co-wrote books, and they're like, oh, that's somebody who's done that before.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Okay, so who is the absolute worst person to work with?
I can't answer that question. And nobody's really worse. It's a day-to-day.
What about the most difficult or biggest mistake or horrible incident?
I mean, I've definitely made some mistakes with my contracts and if you don't if you're just like, I'll help do anything, you can just constantly have to do everything without any increase in pay in the past, early on.
So all the back and forth, the edits, you're in charge of that or not? Or
Things like that. Yeah. Or like if the scope changes dramatically, all of a sudden...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like you have to redo it.
Yes. And those are things that I'm learning.
That's not your fault. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more time.
Yeah.
And then you've already, then all of a sudden something that was supposed to be finished in 2012 goes until 2015, but you had already started on to do other things.
Oh, geez.
Which I don't even know if you can even fix those things because you have to just keep working. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely that you just have to know that things like that happen.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
So was there any incident that you're like, oh man, I'm totally screwed. I don't know, something to look out for? Anyone who's aspiring co-writer?
It helps. Well, it helps to have an agent.
For
your
you.
Own agent.
Uh-huh.
I think you have, who knows how to, you. Someone will be like, hey, will you help me do this book? I'll pay you X amount of money, and you'll be like, oh my God, that's so much money. And then you realize that it's actually not that money if it's like 2 to 3 years worth of work, and that the contract you just signed, they can fire you for no reason, and you have to pay all the money back even if you did 70. Like, so if you don't have an agent, those types of things could happen to you, which has never happened to me.
Okay.
But I do, like a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want an agent.
That's crazy.
But I hope my agent loves that
commission.
I'm saying this.
Yeah.
They do, but they also, they know how they can fight for you. It's hard. Yeah. Oh, see, it's hard. It's also hard to have tough conversations about business with the person that you spend.
You need to work with.
You spend 3 or 4 days a week with sometimes. And so that your agents can be like, they can bump chests.
We'll handle it. Yeah, exactly.
Over
you
the
don't
details.
Want to have that information. Those kind of pressure or tense.
It's interesting because the co-author often becomes the direct contact. It's an interesting dynamic because you are often working directly with the editors and the publishing houses, even though you don't have a direct contract with them. You're working for the person in the middle, yet you become the main contact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So
it's
a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You have to you're often the person who has to deliver bad news. Or we have to change this or redo this.
Right.
Yeah.
What about royalties? Are you part of that or should you?
I mean,
should
yes, have, that's
yeah.
the other thing that your agent although,
should fight for.
Should fight for. Although you've done some books, you know that royalties don't have. One of my friends who is also a co-author, happen very often.
Yeah.
One of my friends who's also a co-author, he's a fabulous co-author with way more fabulous, super best-selling
Chrissy Teigen-esque, yeah.
Yeah, and so he was like, my agent says, if I do my job right, you'll never see a royalty.
As are you in, talking like, about J.J. Goode?
Yes, yeah. He told you that too.
You know, I'm pretty sure.
And, no, and he, and I just remember, I was like, whoa, that's so cool. Like, it's like, because it means that they're making so much money up front that there's they'll never see a royalty. And I'm like, that's awesome. But I would love to get like one royalty someday. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's okay. For me, it's goals. Like school. Yeah. I mean, that's why I love working on these books. It's like I learned so much about so many different foods and cuisines and places and like the techniques and the flavor profiles that were not mine.
Not yours. Yeah.
And it's so it's.
And like, you have to pretend it is because you have to speak through the voice.
Yeah. But it's and. But for me, it's like an eternal education. Like, I love to cook and I love food. That's why I do this. And for me, it's fantastic.
It is an eternal education.
Yeah, I really like it.
There's like hundreds of recipes in this Korean home cooking that we didn't end up talking about today. But
well, you should have Sohee on again to talk about the Korean. Yes. I'll come back and just listen.
She would love to, totally. But so now that you're so educated in so many books, and also you're a food writer on your own, have you ever wanted to step out from behind the scenes and into the stage center and write your own cookbook?
Well, I have not written my own cookbook, but I am working on, hopefully I can come back this fall when my the first book of my really own comes out. It's about the history of American food in 26 dishes, which is not the exact title. I think the title is American Food, and then there's like some subtitle that I'm still working out, but it's the illustrated history of 26
illustrated
American
history
foods.
So, who's doing the illustrations?
My friend Kim from Philadelphia. They're beautiful. Her work is Notine, N-O-T-T-E-N-E. And she was like a handbag designer. She's had a bunch of awesome. She teaches at MICA. She teaches visual illustration. And her own, as an artist, like she does a lot of amazing wallpapers that you probably see at super fancy places that I can't afford. And her own artwork has always been the everyday. Like she got this awesome gig where she won a grant to go into when people they get evicted or they move out or they die. So like all the stuff, like people just get all the stuff from an apartment and throw it in like a, not a dump, but like a site where it's stored. And she got a grant from the city of Philadelphia to go in and pick out items from 10 different apartments and then draw. It's like, it's such a cool, right? Like that's her own art practice, a term I'm just learning, is always been like the everyday. And so the 26 dishes, the 26 things that we did in the book are all kind of ordinary. Like they're yellow mustard and hot wings. And so she's drawing from those.
Oh, that's really, really neat.
That's
cool.
I don't know. There's so many. I'm just about to say, there's so many cookbooks. Do we really need another one? This is like the dumbest thing I could say.
That's what you're saying. That's how you're going to present your book.
Nobody needs my pimento cheese recipe. Like all the other people who have like Rachel. Amazing recipes. No one needs my stuff.
Would you like to learn
how to make pasta in 100 ways? I can do, like somebody already did that book. I can make a lot of salads.
All right. Well, I will look forward to that one. I'm sure your publicist will do a bunch better spin.
I've learned how to use it. I can make a ton of amazing things with sourdough discard. That's the one thing I was just like, I should do a book. Because you know, do you have a sourdough starter? Like you're constantly throwing it out. And I've been like,
or you have to give it to somebody, but you can't have
that. But, like, if you feed it often, that's, like, half a cup of it. So I've been trying to make as many. I just am free-forming. Like, yesterday I made sourdough pancakes. I just threw some starter in there.
Yes.
Added some sugar. And it's like, they tasted
pretty
okay.
I've done that with pancakes, actually.
So that's the one thing I should do.
Yeah.
Discard.
Excellent. Wait, is that going to be part of the American book?
The sourdough?
The sourdough.
No,
this is just another book idea.
Oh, I just because I constantly try to look for ways to use it up. So there you go. That could
that
be my book.
Like a good book.
It might be 5 pages long.
Much to work on. Maybe you'll need to get a co-author for that one.
Oh yeah, I could do what like Michael did. Michael Harlan Cattell. I could go around the world
with the vinegar
and see what people do with their sourdough discard.
Yeah, follow up. No, but really, when is your book coming out, and what is it called?
Right now, it's called American Food. Subtitle: blah 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 blah. To be determined. And then it'll be out this fall.
And it's by just Rachel Warren.
Illustrated by Kim Hall.
Okay, so you do share it.
I'm the writer, she's the illustrator.
That's a first.
We have the exact same birthday. which is weird. We didn't know that.
That's amazing. You're
the exact same, like,
the exact
day,
same year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that crazy? I think it's crazy.
I think that's a really special thing when you find somebody who has that. My person is Britney Spears.
No way.
Yeah. So it's, we have a special relationship. But
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll look forward to that.
I just danced to Britney Spears last night. It was amazing.
Don't we all?
Everyone went crazy.
Oh, man. That's about all the time we have.
Thank you for having me.
On that note, thank you so much, Rachel. Great to have you back. You should do another show, too. And thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage, and thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.